today we're talking with, I would say, a very incendiary rocker, multi-platinum recording artist, Biff Naked. She's got a ton of studio albums. I think she has 6 studio albums and all kinds of videos on the internet and on MTV and everywhere. And she's a headliner in the United States and Canada and Europe. And Biff, it seems like you're all over the place. You're on TV and radio, and
I've been really fortunate with my job to be able to, you know, kind of stay in the game and, you know, be able to carve out a living just performing and creating music. So, knock on wood, I've had a great time.
Absolutely, that's amazing. How did you get into raw foods?
You know, it was really accidental, and it was a really long time ago, before it was a popular way of eating and a popular lifestyle. For me, my motivation when I was in my early 20s to go vegan was kind of partly, I always say, because of eyelashes. It's always my number one reason, because of all the eyelashes on the animals.
Okay.
I just couldn't do it anymore.
I see what you're saying. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, and partly because I always had a stomachache. And a lot of foods just gave me a bellyache all the time. And with, especially in the very beginning of my recording artist career, you know, we were traveling a lot and going overseas. And I just couldn't be constantly, you know, under the problems of having a stomachache, you know. So I knew just through trial and error that having a banana instead of having a piece of pizza, like my band was all eating, even if it was a vegetarian or a vegan piece of pizza, I would just feel terrible all the time, and I would be tired, and I would not be able to do my job as efficiently. So it just kind of was a real natural progression, and my body, you know, guided me into that type of eating. Plus, for me, it was easier when I was traveling to eat an apple or to eat a tomato than to try and, everyone seemed like they spent so much time searching for a restaurant and so much time, you know, always trying to get something to eat. For me, it was just very easy.
Yeah, that's always a great advantage. How long ago was that?
I would say that must have probably been the mid-90s, early
wow.
mid-90s, so probably since 95. And of course, you know, it became popular, I would say, more in the everyday vocabulary of our society. Probably, you know, started in 2000, and I'm guessing it was probably some hot Hollywood actresses really brought it into the vernacular of North America. I'm not sure, you know, because us raw foodists are kind of seen as pretty leftist.
Yeah.
And basically a bunch of hippies, which is fine. You know, I never really scoff at anything like that. And I've always been in situations, you know, where I've been traveling with people and working with people, in my job anyways, they've always drank alcohol, and I didn't drink. You know, they always ate meat, I never did. You know, and I just found, because it's a diplomacy and a democratic little society within a tour bus, you know, I never really bothered them or hawked them about how they ate or what their lifestyle was. You know, I just always just took care of myself.
Wow.
That's how I still am.
Have you always been, since that time, pretty strict about it?
Oh, well, I mean, again, it's a non-issue for me. It's not even something that I have to consciously make an effort to do. I can't imagine eating any other way. Like, it just would never occur to me.
Wow.
I can't even imagine. It's just a natural part of how I exist.
Well, I suppose having come to it, you know, early on, so to speak, in the 90s when you know, it wasn't very well known at all, you had a bit of an advantage, really, in that, I mean, there wasn't much written about it, or there wasn't a lot of publicity, but at the same time, you also didn't have a lot of these packaged, you know, raw junk foods and things that they have now.
Yeah, which I would never eat anyways, and even when I was a vegan, yeah. I didn't really understand the concept of a tofu hot dog, because it would never have occurred to me to eat a hot dog. So I didn't know why I would suddenly begin to eat a hot dog just because it was made from soy.
Right, right.
You know, just, and but I guess it makes it easy for most people. And so I think, well, you know, if it gets people in that direction, it's better for them and it's better for the environment. But, you know, I worry about all the sodium for them.
Sure, sure, sure. Well, you know, I was watching a couple of videos that you did before we got to finally chat today, and not music videos, like interview type videos.
Yes.
And one of the things that you said that I was so glad to hear you say was that you've always been, I forget what show I saw you on, but you gave an answer that you are all for, you know, shedding light on the quote unquote elephant in the room, if there is one. And so, you know, with that in mind, I had a couple of, I guess, tougher questions I wanted to ask you.
Sure.
And they're just in that whole spirit of just asking what I think a lot of raw people are thinking. So I really just wanted to share something and get your reaction. You know, I know a ton of raw foodists personally, and I've talked about you with a lot of them.
Right.
And I want to say that, you know, like 99.9% of the people that I know are very... You know, they're very loving, giving people. It's a great environment and a great set of people to get to know.
Yes.
You know, because there's this whole consciousness that goes along with raw veganism.
Yes.
And one thing that unites us all is this quest for being in a state of optimal health. And I don't want to say that's much different. You know, that's necessarily different from being loving and giving. But it's more of a selfish, in a positive way, kind of goal, because we're all trying to, you know, get in the best possible fitness and health condition as we can.
Right.
And so we're all so united, though, in our belief that this raw veganism is the best absolute way to go. And so when
I
you hear
100%.
Yeah, and so when you hear of a high profile story of, well, here's a raw foodie who got breast cancer.
I know.
Then there's
shocking.
It's completely shocking because there's
Absolutely.
We all view ourselves as these like ultra alkaline superheroes, you know.
Right.
We're impervious to any affliction whatsoever. And so, what happens when that belief gets challenged? I want to know what you think about that.
Oh, it was horrifying, you know. And the first breast cancer is a strange concept, anyways, mm-hmm. in our society. You know, there's a lot of embarrassment that goes along with anybody getting diagnosed with cancer. People may or may not consider that. You know, in our North American culture, even though us raw foodies have our little private, you know, elitist attitudes, exactly what you said about our alkalinity and about our, you know, our potential as human beings, you know, cancers for other people.
Right.
Certainly. You know, and look at their diet, look at their lifestyle. That it's no wonder. No wonder cancer rates are what they are. And then to have someone like me, you know, 37-year-old woman in the prime of her life, get such a surprise. And really it was very surprising. You know, and I mean, rightly or wrongly, I'm not anyone to, you know, become devastated or downtrodden about anything that comes my way, because it's all just part of my experience.
Right, right.
And it did make me self-conscious, for sure, because it was like, well, how do you explain that? Well, gosh, let's try and think of it scientifically. And because I'm an adopted kid who was born in India, I don't have a lot of information about my genetic history.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Right.
Otherwise, it would be easy for me to produce some documentation and reassure all of us and go, well, look, well, obviously, you know, obviously I carry a gene somewhere in my lineage that predisposes me to this, no matter what I do. You know, and a lot of people, even in my within my treatment periphery at the cancer agency and within a group of women that I was exercising with who were all in chemotherapy at the same time, you know, they couldn't understand why, and especially during chemotherapy, you know, I made what they called mud shakes all the time.
Yeah.
And I, you know, had my, you know, my black kale and black blueberry, you know, blackberry shakes with bananas that I ate every day. And I had my frozen banana ice cream if my, you know, mouth bothered me or my stomach bothered me. I never deviated from how I am, nor would I. And I said, well, you think that now you know it doesn't protect you. Why wouldn't you just knock it off? And you go to so much effort, and it takes so much effort for you. And I just thought, you know, it does not ever deter me, ever, from my own beliefs, nutritionally and ethically, I guess. It never did deter me. I believed in my heart that I would fare better than some other patients.
Oh,
because of how I ate, and even with chemotherapy, which very traditionally makes patients pretty sick, basically, which is its intention. You know, cancer is a very misunderstood disease, I guess, if you will, and you know, basically they do everything they can to eliminate the cancerous cells, and in the process keep their fingers crossed that they don't kill too many of your healthy cells.
Right.
You know, and I just really believe that if I just kept on my path and you know, maintained my sense of humor and my lifestyle, I found that the fatigue definitely played a role in how I was able to, you know, exercise, but perhaps it was for the best. Perhaps I needed to find more balance in that way, and the fatigue made me stop and sit down and rest, you know. So I really feel that I excelled as a patient because of how I ate and how I, you know, approached just kind of being sick. And, you know, it was a very, very interesting experience for me. You know, I'm a science geek, and I just thought that physiologically it was fascinating. It was just fascinating.
Well, yeah,
I'll always eat the same.
Yeah.
And regardless, and I mean, I really believe that I must probably have a genetic predisposition.
Well,
because it didn't really make a lot of sense.
When I've talked to some people, it's not infrequent that something will come up, well, like, well, you know, maybe it was her lifestyle. Like, you know, here's a person who, you know, maybe it was, the tattoos. Maybe there's something toxic there, or maybe
right.
Here's a person who plays in smoky rock and roll venues every night of the week, and maybe all that secondhand smoke got to her.
Oh, for sure. Those could all be contributing factors. And when I was a young woman, you know, a teenager, trying to make my way through adolescence, I smoked cigarettes.
Oh, you did?
You know, and I can look at that and go, well, I was still developing as an adult. Perhaps that was a factor, and it could very well be. Perhaps it was a factor that, you know, I had a rather stressful travel schedule.
Yeah.
You know, but it's really, it, It is up for speculation, and I speculate about it myself and think, well, maybe because when I was a child, my parents fed me a standard North American diet when my body and cells were all still developing. You know, they didn't have a chance, or because it's natural for us all to look for a reason. We always need a reason.
Yeah.
For everything. It's our nature as inquisitive human beings. And I share that same desire. People need explanations, you know, for everything. It's natural for us to seek out the answers of why.
Well, I suppose a positive spin on that frustration of never really knowing the source would be to consider, you know, had you not chosen the healthiest, which I also agree is the healthiest path you could have chosen, it could have been a lot worse. I mean,
oh, definitely.
You might have gotten it anyway.
I definitely think so.
Not even have made it.
I definitely think that's true. And I also saw a lot of patients that were in treatment at the same time as I was. They didn't have the same positive energy that I was able to kind of keep going every day. You know, people became quite downtrodden, or they just really seemed to me to feel a lot sicker a lot of the time.
Wow.
And I just kind of continued and went on my merry way. And granted, it was a very deliberate effort for me.
Yeah.
But I did, you know, just go ahead and keep working and make my record and, you know, just go about my path the way I believed I was meant to.
Wow. Those are fascinating points. I hadn't thought of it that way. You know, we always say that Ra helps people, you know, become their true self a little bit more because they're not pushing down all their emotions with all that cooked heavy food and stuff. And so maybe the emotional aspects are a little different for somebody who's a Ra.
Oh, definitely.
Person.
And I think there's a lot of real truth to that physiologically, you know. They're eating things that are, you know, making their dopamine levels different from ours.
Right.
You know what I mean? So they're going to feel perhaps not as clear, not as as much clarity. As you probably know, I mean, there's just so many different layers of differences between people who, you know, eat what I consider incorrectly.
Yeah. So how's your health right now?
I always feel great, and I always say I can't complain, and I really can't.
That's super.
You know, I'm really enjoying being home. We just got off the road from another Canadian tour, and I've been able to resume my regular schedule of you know, morning workouts and getting my nature walks in and doing my yoga classes and still going to work.
And taking care of your little lovey named Nicholas, right?
Oh, he's so funny. He makes me laugh every day of my life.
You know, I was just before you called, actually, listening to one of your albums, and I was listening to that tune, "You Are the Master," and I thought, I wonder if she ever sings that to Nicholas.
Oh yes.
I bet.
And that's exactly where that inspiration came from.
Really?
You know,
because I
felt bad sometimes, you know, especially when my Bichon Anastasia was still alive.
Mm.
She would just sit patiently. She would just sit there patiently and just wait. She just waited, and she would wait as long as it took until she got a tummy rub.
Oh.
And I thought, isn't that a good, you know, kind of comparison to how we all are emotionally? We just, that's all we really want is that tummy rub.
Yeah, right.
And that's kind of where that imagination went.
Well, your musical style, you know, has a especially lately has a hard edge to it, and I noticed that you know, if you go to your webpage, it's you hear the "You Make Me Sick" the lick from that guitar,
mm-hmm. Right.
And you know, it's just this hardcore experience, even when you just go on the website. And when I read your, you know, your writings, like on Twitter and on your blog and stuff, you seem to have also found a, I don't know if it's a balance or what, but through spiritual practices and so forth. And I was wondering if you could speak to that a little bit, to these two types of energies and how they dovetail in your life. I know, are they opposing or are they complementary? Or that
they're definitely complementary. And I've always been, I've been a hippie. And that's what I basically, you know, call my mentality. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were raised like little love bugs, my two sisters and I, in my parents' home. My parents were missionaries working in India when they adopted us, and you know, we were raised in a really gentle, healthy, loving environment. You know, my parents marched on Washington with Martin Luther King. I mean, they're peace, love, and happiness, good kids from Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really how we were raised, and I've always been that way. I mean, music is funny. I have always been a fan, probably of every genre of music, and how on earth I wound up becoming successful doing rock and roll, I'll never understand. Because we used to do everything. We did rock and roll, we did rap songs, we did ballads, you know, everything. And that seemed to be what was really, you know, enabling me to move forward as a recording artist. And it's fun. It's lots of fun to go up on stage and yell and scream and,
sure,
you know, sing songs about heartbreak or injustice. And, you know, you have kind of a mutual sharage of emotion with your audience, and it really is a lot of fun. But I've been very, very fortunate in that each of my records that I've been lucky enough to make has a great variety of different styles on it. And obviously a lot of people don't know that, and they say, oh, that's a tattooed lady, oh no. And they can't know that, you know, my tattoos, you know, there's Farsi words, sol and khoda, you know, for peace and God, and there's Hindi words, prema and shanti.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all they see is tattoos. They don't see, for sure, you know.
Gotcha.
The depth of my, you know, open chakras, I guess. And that's okay. You know, I don't really, you know, I basically do it for me. And a lot of the tattoos that I have, you know, I started getting them when I was pretty young. And I can't lament any of them, though I probably would have made different choices had I been a little older. But at the same time, you know, that's a part of my history. And I think it's, you know, it's all a big part of me. And I have a good time laughing at myself.
So when you're getting one, is there any doubt at the moment? Do you think, so you don't think, what if I'm not going to like this in 10 years? You just think, I love this now, I want this.
Oh, definitely. You know, and some of them were very, you know, very, very integral to me, you know, in so much as it's like recording messages in your skin, basically.
Yeah.
And for me, you know, some of the tattoos I have are very meaningful to me. Like, you know, I have my Manipuraka chakra tattooed over my sternum. And I have a massive Om Namah Shivaya tattooed across my ribcage. And those were very deeply, deeply important to me at the time that I was getting them.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I've never had any second guessing or regrets, and even though in life I've certainly made mistakes as a human being, whether it's in, you know, relationships or decisions I may have made differently at another time, I don't regret anything, because I think that everything is pretty much for a reason, even if it isn't clear to you at the time. Eventually it will be.
Right. No, I agree with that.
There's lessons everywhere.
Well, since we were talking about tattoos, and we were also talking about, you know, this is obviously for a health audience. Have you done any research into the various, are there new inks now that are I know there's like organic ones you can get, and...
Yes, definitely. They've changed, I'm sure, a lot of the formulations. You know, probably there are a lot of their motivations as artists. And I mean, you know, basically a lot of them really truly are artists.
Yeah.
And their medium is skin. They have soy-based inks now. They have inks that are, you know, non-toxic. I'm sure that back in, you know, World War II, and when these sailors and army guys were going all over the world getting tattooed, they weren't concerned about the toxicity.
Right.
Of the inks, and, you know, I don't know for sure if there's a lot of research regarding cancer rates and tattooed people versus non-tattooed people, but I wouldn't be surprised if some of the skin cancers may or may not be related to ink. That's really hard to say.
Yeah, I haven't found much research on that either.
Yeah, I don't, and frankly, I think it's simply because there haven't been any studies.
Probably. I heard, now are you getting, did I read you're having the Taj Mahal tattooed on your back?
I am.
How's that coming?
I am, and it's funny because all the other ladies who are in my breast cancer chemotherapy group all went running out and got their pink ribbon tattoos. And I thought, well, isn't that empowering for them? They wanted to do something that made them feel empowered, like they got a gold star after they had completed treatment successfully, and as they should. And for me, my gold star was definitely getting the Taj Mahal on my back. And it's also a nod to a great fascination that I have for Russian prison tattoos. I spent some time in Russia a couple of years ago filming a martial arts television show. And it's just such a rich culture, and they have such a history. And I became quite intrigued with their, signage. It's almost like they have an entire language written among these convicts in tattoos.
Wow.
And it's a real art form, and it's really interesting to me. So instead of getting what, say, a Russian convict would get, would be the Moscow skyline, I decided for me, the Taj Mahal was my definite, you know, I've survived something image.
Yeah, and that's what, I mean, that's the ultimate one.
Yeah, it's a palace that was built out of love.
Yeah.
For someone, so, you know, it was very symbolic for me.
My wife and I've been to India, but it's so enormous. We actually didn't make it to the Taj Mahal.
Yeah,
even
it's massive. There's so much to do and see.
Well, now, when you're traveling to other countries like that, like, you know, whether it's Russia or India or even, well, I guess Europe's easier, but bringing it back to raw foods a little bit, is it hard to be raw when you're in some of these countries?
Never.
Really?
Never. I think it's the easiest way in the world to eat.
Yeah.
Obviously, when I travel, I'm a little more mono food.
Uh-huh.
You know, and again, that's easy. And I think that, you know, once we lose our attachments to regimen, it's easier for us to just be open to whatever, you know, comes our way nutritionally. And we always survive. We always find our way. And I just think, I just always kind of buckle and go, man, we're really on to something. And I feel sorry for everyone else who's stuck kind of scavenging for food when we can eat mangoes and durians and
papayas
and all manner of things.
Yeah, there's, I remember there being so much availability of fresh fruits, especially. We spent most of our time in the South, but,
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah.
It's beautiful down there.
But, what I was going to ask you was about traveling and touring. Do you get to many raw restaurants?
Almost never.
Really?
You know, almost never. And, that's just basically because we're in a town.
Yeah.
For one day.
And,
you know, you pull up to the venue, you've been traveling all night, and it's 2:00 in the afternoon, and, you know, you have a couple interviews at the venue. If you're lucky, you have a radio station interview you have to travel to, and then come back and do sound check.
Yeah.
And then by this time, you know, doors are opening at 7:00, and, you know, you might be able to get something into your mouth before your show. But it, you know, the raw restaurant, if there is one, may not be close to the venue.
Right.
Everyone else in the band has gone out to eat at the, you know, Chili's or wherever they go. And you're kind of left to your own devices. And for me, it was just always easier. And with time constraints, to just carry my little disposable grocery bag with me and kind of collect food all day. You know, I always have a banana in the morning. So if I find one, I save it because I want to save it for the next day's breakfast. And, I'll just collect. I have oranges.
So don't you have some
group? After the concert.
Some groupie who can run out and get you some oranges?
Sometimes that happens.
Oh, that's good.
Sometimes the venue, like for example, Theater of the Living Arts.
Yeah.
You know, it's there. They have things available when you arrive at the venue because it's been prearranged. You know, and I always say, I always find something to eat. Always. Always. It's so easy. A handful of raw almonds and a banana, and I'm set.
Wow. Yeah, one closing question I have was a bit of a personal question, but I think it's of interest to some people in general, so I'll ask it anyway. See, I have a 14-year-old daughter, as I just mentioned before, who's just now getting into guitar and writing her own songs, and she even just took me to see her favorite band last week, you know, which I don't know how much longer she's going to want to take her dad to concerts.
Right.
But, you know, she took me to see this band called Hawthorne Heights, which is one of her favorite band, and...
Right.
And I was wondering, what advice do you have for the younger generation, specifically those kids who are thinking, you know, I want to rock. This is what I want to do with my life.
Well, you know, like any artist, whether it's in music or whether they want to be a painter or whether they want to go into acting, you know, really, you just, I think the number one key to anybody following their passion, the key really is perseverance more than anything else.
Right.
I mean, you know, I was probably 15 years before I ever even got a tour bus.
Wow.
For the first time. So, I mean, we toured in vans. We slept in vans. You know, we had to sell cassette tapes off the stage at the end of the show. You know, and now it just seems like it's so much easier for bands and artists to be able to get the word out that they're going to be playing somewhere.
Oh, I bet.
You know, through the internet, through their Facebook or Twitter or any websites, anything. It just seems to me, as someone who's been in the music industry for 25 years, I just think it's got to be way easier now, even though my guess is that the market really is saturated with millions and millions of very valid bands and artists, all kind of competing for the same space. It's just like anything in life. You know, if you're doing what you love, that's your reward.
Right.
And it'll keep you going and following your dreams.
Wow. Well, hey, and by the way, and you have a presence all over the internet. You had a great website, biffnaked.com.
Thank you.
And you're also on Twitter a lot, right?
Yeah, I have a good time with that.
You seem to tweet a lot.
Yeah, I have a really fun time.
And where else do you hang out? MySpace?
Not so much. You know, I didn't have a computer till a year ago.
Really?
In my whole life. I didn't have television.
Wow.
Or anything. They just were never important to me. And I traveled. And it just was never my priority. I'm a bookworm. I collect books. I love books. I had two, you know, little dogs. One of whom has had a number of spinal surgeries, you know, up until she died.
Hmm.
And it was just never a priority. So with stuff like Facebook and MySpace and websites, all those years throughout the 90s and even into the this decade, you know, I kind of just, in good faith, relied on the various record companies to do what they do with websites for bands. I really didn't worry about it, or it wasn't a priority for me.
Wow.
And so I've been on a computer for a year. I can't type. I can't type on it. So I go really slow. And my manager had put the Twitter on my little mobile hand gadget.
Mm.
Called a BlackBerry, which was how they would forward me press information or flight itineraries.
Oh, okay.
So I can do that very easily when I'm out and about. And I sure get a big kick out of it.
It seems like it, yeah. Well, your site is very good.
Thank you.
Well, I'm thrilled that you took the time out to talk with us. I think a lot of this will answer a lot of questions that quite a number of raw foodies have, and
right.
And keep the conversation going and the awareness going.
Well, it's just when it comes to talking about diet and lifestyle and spirituality, I mean, I'm just so passionate about it.
Yeah.
I really enjoy discussing it and creating dialogue. I really believe it's part of my purpose.
That reminded me of one other question I didn't ask you, which was, when you got diagnosed, you know, there are websites out there. There's a famous website, this woman, Chris Carr. I don't know if you...
Right, yes, I have all of her books.
Yeah, I mean, there are people who use raw as a treatment plan.
I know, I read it when I got her, when I was first diagnosed, obviously. And because, especially at that time, I wasn't on a computer.
Yeah.
I went down and bought books. And, yeah, it was quite, you know, it was with great interest, obviously, that I read Chris's book. And of course, like a lot of people who've been raw for a long time, you know, you kind of read things periodically where people's, you know, they do it only for short periods of time.
Yeah.
And I just think, wow, why wouldn't you just adopt it?
Right.
Lifestyle.
I know.
Don't you feel better? Why would you ever want to go back? But I think that what she's done in her endeavors is really amazing. It's really remarkable. you know, she's great. But I think this, you know, I think the same thing about the Butenko family or Paul Nisson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just, I think everyone really, you know, they find their calling, and they're here, they're put here to teach.
Absolutely.
They're teachers, and it's cool.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what my wife and I are in the middle of doing, that same thing. We're
exactly. We're just, you guys are a perfect example.
Yeah. It's amazing how many people don't know a thing about how to make their body healthy.
I know.
It's a shame.
It's the easiest thing in the world.
But it is. It really is. It really
yeah.
is. But, hey, Biff, I don't want to keep you forever, but I really appreciate you talking with me, and just, you know, namaste. Thank you.
Thanks. I really appreciate it, Jeff.
Okay, Biff. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.